fast, but again a block. The droid's third attack came from the opposite side as its blade flashed in a large half-circle. Vader parried and riposted, angling a slash at the droid's head. The droid blocked and slid back a meter out of range, blade held over its head, point angled down. The slight ache in Vader's shoulder where Luke had cut through his armor during their fight was definitely better. He hardly felt any soreness at all with that series. He moved in, swung a feint at the droid's neck, twisted his wrists and pivoted the lightsaber for a second feint at the same side, then a third feint, a jab at the midsection. The droid stepped back and cross-blocked the final feint. Vader V-stepped to his left, cocked his blade over his left shoulder, and hacked 45 degrees at the base of the metal neck. The droid's block was a quarter second slow. Strong as it was not strong enough to offset the power and momentum of Vader's strike. The blades met, hissed, and sparked, but Vader's sword shoved the droid's blade to the side. It tried to backpedal. Too late. The lightsaber hit midway between the droid's neck and shoulder joint, sheared through the exoframe and halfway through the chest. Circuitry sparked, shorted out. Sparks and acrid smoke erupted from the droid's body. It dropped the lightsaber as its hand controls died, fell to its knees. Vader cocked the weapon over his right shoulder and swung in a flat horizontal arc. The lightsaber sliced through the droid's neck and took its head off. The head fell, bounced, and the droid's decapitated body fell backward. Vader stood over the downed droid. Soon he would have to order another dozen of them produced. This was the eighth one of the originals. He had but four left, and the next batch would need to be improved. It was getting too easy. His shoulder definitely felt better. He shut off his lightsaber and turned away from the droid. An aide stood in the doorway, looking impressed and nervous. "Clean up the mess," Vader said. He strode away. He did not look back. Inside his X-Wing, Luke took a deep breath. "You ready, R2? R2 whistled assent. "This is Rogue Leader," Luke said. "Lock your foils into attack position. Accelerate to sub-6 and acknowledge."
"Rogue One, copy," Wedge said over the comm.
"Rogue Two, that's affirmative. Lock and load."
"Rogue Three, I copy."
The rest of the squadron acknowledged Luke's orders. They were ready as they were going to get. The Dayside destroyer lay dead ahead, and by now its long-range sensors would have spotted the incoming X-Wings, and the commander would have started scrambling his fighter force. The latest TIE fighters were a couple of sublight units faster than an unmodified X-Wing, TIE interceptors faster still, but they couldn't get to top speed immediately, so Rogue Squadron would get one relatively free pass at the destroyer before the TIEs got clear and moving. Not that they'd be able to do much to the destroyer with fighter wattage laser cannons or proton torpedoes. Destroyer shields and armor were too thick, but a lucky shot might do a little damage, and it would make the Imperials keep their heads down. They couldn't know if the Alliance might have outfitted its snub fighters with some new weapon. It would make them sweat a little. TIEs were faster, but no more maneuverable, and the X-Wings had the advantage in shielding. TIEs didn't have any, save for a few of the specially equipped interceptors, like the one Vader had.
"Here they come," Rogue Six said.
That was Wes Jansen, an old hand. A score of TIE fighters spewed from the destroyer's flight bay ports.
"I see them, Wes," Luke said. "Everybody stay alert."
Took them long enough, Luke thought.
Must have thought it was a drill. They probably don't get much action out here. Maybe they gotten fat and lazy.
Well, he could hope they had.
"Double up on the forward shields," Luke ordered. "Attack speed, targets of opportunity."
"Yeehaw!"
one of the squad yelled into the comm. Luke had to smile. He really should tell whoever it was, sounded like Rogue Five, that was Dix, to bottle the unofficial comm speak, but he knew just how the pilot felt. There was nothing else in the universe that felt like flying into combat.
"Watch yourselves," Luke said.
Then he was cutting across the destroyer's axis, laser cannon spitting high-energy beams, no time to talk now. The battle was joined. On the Millennium Falcon, Leia crouched down behind Chewie and Lando in the control cockpit. 3PO stood behind them, braced more or less in the doorway.
"Do be careful, Master Lando. We're awfully close to the tops of those trees."
Oh, really? Lando said. I hadn't noticed.
Well, there's no need for sarcasm.
Ahead of them a couple hundred meters, Dash flew the outrider, and the wind of his passage was enough to fan the tall evergreens below. You could see the air wake ripple through the foliage. The chrome-silver ship cleared the tops of the highest trees by no more than 5 meters.
Any closer and we'll get green stains on our belly, Leia said.
Tell me about it, Lando said. He said we'd have to fly low, but I didn't realize he meant this low. Chewie, what's our altitude? Chewie looked at the control panel and said something in that half-gargle, half-moan of his.
Oh, my, 3PO said.
Do I want to know? Leia said. I don't think so, Lando said. Over the comm on a shielded op-chan, Dash spoke.
You nervous back there, Calrissian?
Lando glanced at Chewie.
Who, us?
Nah, I thought you said we were going to be flying low, Dash. We're practically in the stratosphere way up here. He cut the comm off. Lando grinned at Chewie.
Guess I told him, didn't I?
Dash didn't respond in words. Instead, the outrider dropped 4 meters lower. If a passenger on the smuggler's ship could have reached through the floor, he would have been able to touch the tops of the trees with his fingertips.
He's crazy, Leia thought.
He's crazy, she said.
Yeah, but he can fly. You've got to hand him that, Lando said. Give me a little more thrust, Chewie.
Master Lando, what are you doing?
I can't let him think he's scared us, can I?
Certainly you can, 3PO said. He has.
You're crazier than he is, Leia put in.
The Millennium Falcon lost 4 meters of altitude. Chewie said something. 3PO said,
Oh, dear.
What?
Leia asked. 3PO waved his arms.
He says that another centimeter and we'll snag the laser cannon.
Leia shook his head.
What's with this guy? What's he trying to prove?
Lando concentrated on his flying. That was good, so he didn't look at her as he spoke.
You never heard the story of the Rendars?
Should I have?
Chewie yelled something.
I see it, Lando said.
The ship lifted a meter to avoid a particularly tall tree directly in its path. After they'd cleared it, Lando continued.
Dash was at the Imperial Academy, a year or so behind Han. His family was wealthy and highly placed. Dash's older brother was a freighter pilot, working his way up through the family shipping company. There was an accident. A control system blew out, not the pilot's fault, and the freighter crashed on liftoff from the Coruscant spaceport. Killed the crew, destroyed the ship.
Leia nodded. Terrible. So?
Chewie started to speak, but Lando beat him to it.
I see it. Do you want to fly it?
Chewie grunted. Leia didn't need to speak Wookiee to understand that one.
Then be quiet and let me do it.
The Falcon did another little hop behind the outrider, settled back into its dangerous dance with the treetops.
So the building the freighter hit was the Emperor's private museum. Had a lot of his mementos in it. Most of them were lost in the ensuing fire. The Emperor was not happy. He had the Rendar family's property seized, then had them banished from Coruscant. That included Dash. They kicked him out of the academy on Corita and off that planet, too.
Leia ground her teeth. That kind of thing was one of the reasons the Alliance was fighting the Empire. No one should have that much power, that he could arbitrarily do such things unchecked. And Leia knew of worse, knew of much worse. The Death Star had destroyed her homeworld, killed millions, as a test of its power, just to see if it worked. It had meant nothing to the Empire, less grief than swatting a fly.
I can see that he wouldn't have any love for the Empire, Leia said. Why isn't he working for the Alliance?
Lando shrugged. He doesn't want to owe anybody, doesn't want anybody to owe him. He works for whoever pays the most. He's downright magic with anything that flies, and he can pick wing nuts off a tabletop with a blaster without scorching the finish. He's a good man to have at your back when the going gets hot, as long as your money lasts. Leia nodded. The Empire had ruined a lot of good people. Looked as if Dash Rendar was one more casualty. 4 TIE fighters roared in, spewing death. Luke yelled at Wedge. Rogue One, look out, on your port, bearing 305.
Wedge's X-Wing immediately peeled left and down.
Thanks, Luke.
Luke punched it, swung a shallow turn, and headed straight for the attacking squad.
Use the Force, Luke.
Luke grinned. The first time he'd heard that during the attack on the Death Star, he hadn't understood. He knew what it meant now. Targeting sensors off, rear shields off, reroute more power to the guns. R2 was not pleased and said so. Sorry, buddy, but this way is better. Luke reached out. The Force was here as it was everywhere, and it was no harder to touch deep in space than it was in the swamps on Dagobah. He let it fill him. The TIE fighters suddenly seemed to be moving slower. Luke's hands flew over the controls. He moved the stick with sharp and precise movements, swung to his starboard and lit the lasers, double-tapped the fire button. Lines of fire lanced out and shattered one, two of the four TIE fighters. The explosion spat a hard spray of wreckage at him as Luke looped away. Shards of the destroyed TIEs sleeted against the X-Wing's transparasteel canopy, a metal and plastic hail.
Fine shooting, Rogue Leader, Rogue Five said.
Thanks, Dix.
More coming in, six blips at 175, Rogue Four said.
Watch your back, Luke, somebody said. You got a tail. But Luke had already felt the approach of the TIE and had put his fighter into a hard downturn. He flew an outside loop and came up behind the TIE. Luke stroked his fire button once, and the TIE shattered into expensive scrap.
Rogue Two, you got a pair of them coming in at 224. Move it.
Copy that, Wes. I owe you one.
Pay me back later.
The X-Wings and TIE fighters streaked back and forth through the blackness of space, tossing incandescent spears of hard light at each other.
I'm hit, Rogue Two said. Got my R2 unit and punched a hole in my canopy. I've got a patch here.
Okay, the leak is plugged.
Break off and return to base, Rogue Two, Luke said.
Hey, I can still shoot, and I got manual.
Negative, Will. There's too many for that. Take a walk. R2 whistled rapidly.
Doesn't apply to me, Luke said. I've got an edge.
Copy, Rogue Leader. Rogue Two, returning to base. Good luck, guys. I'll put the kettle on for tea.
Two more TIEs came at Luke, and he moved instinctively, pulled the stick and soared away from the attackers at almost 90 degrees, then looped at the top and dropped back toward the attackers in a power dive, lasers blinking. One of the TIEs exploded, the other's engine flamed and went out, and the wounded TIE coasted out of the fight without main power.
Here comes another wave, Wedge said. 12 blips at 303 and closing fast.
The odds were getting worse, the dangers increasing by the second, and Rogue Squadron was down to one member. Things didn't look good. Despite that, Luke was having a great time. He might not be much of a Jedi, but he could fly. He hoped Lando and Leia and Chewie were doing okay. Acceleration pulled at his body as he swung the X-Wing into a hard power turn. The battle continued. 8. Late afternoon shaded into evening as Zizor left the house of his mistress, an almost palatial dwelling he had bestowed upon her as a going-away gift, though she did not yet know the affair was over. Zizor never spent more than a few months with any female. Because of his hormonal makeup, his ability to produce overwhelmingly powerful pheromones, he never had any trouble attracting new companions. But because it was so easy, he quickly tired of them, no matter how beautiful, no matter how clever. He had never found a companion he could consider his equal, and if he ever did, well, how would he be able to trust someone that adept? An interesting conundrum. Moreover, once a meal was eaten, no matter how delicious, he preferred to dine on a different delicacy the next time. A warm rain drizzled down from a condensation cloud hanging low over this section of the city. Such micro-weather cells were quite common at this season. A short distance away, the skies might be crystal clear. As the darkness thickened and where clouds did not interfere, one could view the colorful discharge auroras and the red and blue running lights of the constant stream of ship traffic going to and from orbit, even here in the center of the city glow. The two bodyguards waiting at the exit accompanied Zizor to his armored luxury coach, where two more guards and the droid chauffeur waited. Zizor entered the vehicle and leaned back on the cloned leather seat. His mistress would receive a call from Guri shortly, a generous severance payment and good wishes for her future. She would also be told never to attempt to contact Zizor again. Should she do so,
the consequences would be dire. Thus far, only one of his ex-companions had tried to see him after their arrangement had been terminated. That unfortunate woman, he was told, had become part of a tall commercial plex on the southern enclave, courtesy of a giant factory-like construction droid that had somehow, alas, accidentally mixed her in with a vat of Duracrete. Life was full of dangers, even here.
"We'll have dinner at the Minari,"
Zizor told the droid. The coach lifted and swung smoothly up into the traffic pattern, bracketed front and back by bodyguards and their own air speeders. The trio of vehicles reached cruising altitude and headed for Monument Park, where the planet's single uncovered mountain peak jutted above the surface's otherwise all-encompassing building complex. There was a restaurant that catered to the wealthy and powerful on a spire near the park, and from the shelter of the building, one could view the mountain, even see through the restaurant's transparent-steel walls the religious fanatics who maintained vigil over the peak to prevent tourists from stealing the bare rock for souvenirs. One booked reservations for the Minari months in advance, and then only if one's name was on the approved list. It was the most exclusive restaurant on the planet. Exclusive, but even so, no matter how crowded the Minari, no matter how it might upset a rich man to see an empty space when he'd waited months for a chance to dine there, a place was always kept open for Prince Zizor. If he took it upon himself to drop in, he was ushered to his private booth without delay. To most of the diners, Zizor would be simply another wealthy shipping magnate, no more important than 1,000 other rich beings in the Imperial Center. They would wonder why he deserved such treatment when they did not, given that many of the patrons had more credits to their account than Zizor, at least in his guise of shipper. None of them had more money than Black Sun. Besides, Zizor was one of the place's owners, though that was not common knowledge, and word had filtered down from the top. If Prince Zizor has to wait to be seated, the manager who allows such stupidity to occur will be looking for another job before he can stammer an apology.